is Nation Radio with Alan Mitchell, a.k.a. Low Tide. Brought to you by The Pint, Oodle Noodle, and OilersNation.com.
Only on Edmonton Sports Radio.
Team 1260.
And in this hour, we'll talk to David Staples from the Edmonton Journal and some very interesting things to talk about, including some advanced stats, why he's cheering for the Bruins in the arena. Also talk to Kent Wilson from Flames Nation about the unusual week that the Calgary Flames had. And Jeff Grischel will be by to explain the NHL Combine to me. That should be about a five-hour segment. We are joined now by David Staples. David, how are you, man?
I'm good. Hi, Alan.
I got lots to talk to you about. Let's first of all talk about a fabulous article you wrote a few days back with regard to why you're cheering for Canada's team, the Boston Bruins.
Yes, indeed. I mean, if you're a serious hockey fan and you don't live in BC, let's face it, there's no way on earth that you can cheer for the Vancouver Canucks.
Too true.
They are the team. The player in my mind who epitomizes the Vancouver Canucks more than any other player is Lars Lindgren. They are synonymous with mediocrity, and they have been since day one. So we have this anomaly, this blip, this small sample size, but they cannot be, unless we want to have Canadian hockey being mediocre hockey, we can't have the Vancouver Canucks as Canada's team.
The line that got me was, this is from your article, just seems wrong for the Canucks to be associated with hockey excellence. They are, after all, the team of Dennis Kierens, Jurke Lume, Gino Odjic, Rick Lands, Per-Olof Brassar, and Don Tannehill.
And you remember all those players.
Oh, I do.
Like I do.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, there's every once in a while, NHL Network will show the 82 Islanders Canucks, and if you can get by the uniforms, you're impressed with Gradin, and that's about it. I mean, they were not a motley crew, and probably one of the worst Stanley Cup final teams ever.
And another blip, you know, another kind of thing that went against the grain of Canuck history. So, you know, this team is a very good team. But I can't get my head around rooting for them, and I can't see them as Canada's team. I mean, the other thing is that the Boston Bruins have more Canadian content and more significant Canadian players than the Vancouver Canucks do. So there's that, which is a smaller point. But the Canucks, I mean, this after all, is also the team of Matt Cook, the team of Kessler, the team of Brian Burke, the team of Todd Bertuzzi. There's plenty of reason to hate these guys, too. And we've heard this from Ryan Whitney in the last week, that the players themselves in the NHL can't stand this team. So
yeah, and
it's not just the fans that don't like them.
Yeah, and Bolin mentioned it as well. A couple of things I really wanted to touch base with you with regard to. Let's start with the arena. You wrote an article in the Journal, I think it was yesterday or the day before, that laid out perfectly the situation as it stands now. There's still a lot of work to do on both sides, right?
Well, first of all, there's a $100 million shortfall, and the province is being asked to step up and help out. And you know, some people are ardently, violently against that. They're violently against any public money going into this project. Other people see a benefit for downtown and for, you know, this could be a real boost for downtown and could secure the Oilers in the city for another 40 years. And that's how I see it. And, you know, there's Oilers fans all over the province. Northern Alberta, the Oilers are Northern Alberta's team, so they see a role for the province helping out as well. So, you know, I'd like to see that happen. At the same time, a lot of people have questions about City Hall kind of finalizing the framework for their agreement with the Oilers, and they need more answers to that. And I completely agree with that. I'm as hungry for details as anyone, and I'd like to know the exact particulars, and I think there has to be that kind of disclosure from City Hall and the Cates Group on what is the deal? What exactly is the deal?
And I think there's a lot of, for instance, this is a small item, but when I read it, I was curious about it. Northlands, if it closes its doors, who pays for all those employee packages, payouts for obviously they will no longer be employed? That could be huge.
Well, if you're talking about Northlands itself just shutting down, I mean, Northlands has the Expo Center to run.
Right.
You know, they took on this huge project. They've got enough on their hands to worry about, Northlands does. And they're going to need plenty of employees to run that Expo Center. You know, they went on a limb. They got $150 million of public money to build that thing. So that's their job, one. I don't, most of the people who work the games are temporary employees. So mm-hmm. I don't think that'll be a huge issue. Northlands is going to lose a lot of revenue, though, and that's a bigger issue. They don't want to give it up. The Cates Group wants that money, so there's a fight there, and they're going to have to figure that out.
What did the city, though, did they not somewhat commit to that when they made the framework of the deal with Cates Group?
There's some question. I mean, the city can't compel Northlands to do any to shut down at the Coliseum. City Northlands has the lease, and they can keep running it if they desire. The Northlands' problem is that they're a booster group. They're supposed to do, and their rhetoric has always been, we will do what is right for the city of Edmonton. And if city council decides, and the people of, you know, presumably the majority of the people want a downtown arena, and Northlands is getting in the way, well, if they're true to their word, they might have to back out. You know, they clearly will need some kind of help if they're losing a lot of money. But as someone who's there for the city, they've got to put the city first.
Is everybody at City Hall who's involved in this comfortable that all the questions will be answered eventually? That they'll have open policy in terms of answers?
No, there's 13 politicians on council, and some of them are, you know, they are as ideologically opposed from the right. You know, it's the right and the left wing, the far right and the far left, who are most opposed to this deal, and you have councilors on both sides of the, representing both of those spectrums on council, who are opposed to this deal right now, and I doubt some of them will ever be satisfied.
Right. So there are
will be satisfied.
Right. So there are things that could derail this.
Yes.
Okay.
I mean, if Northlands and they could prove problematic. The province can decide not to help out. At that point, what happens? I mean, the city is not going to be putting any more money into this. I think the Cates Group has a pretty good deal here from the city. I think the city also, I think it's a deal both sides can live with. The Cates Group may decide that they're just going to go ahead with it or not. I mean, things can come ahead with the Northlands, and the city might have to put pressure on Northlands then to comply. So I think the pressure is going to have to be ratcheted up on a number of groups, just like in any negotiation, just like it was on City Hall and the Cates Group recently, where the Cates Group and the city made compromises and concessions both for a final deal to happen.
Is there any question? I mean, I guess the reason why the city would be, you know, heavily involved and obviously endorse this and rubber stamp it would be the opportunity for downtown redevelopment, and obviously that whole area could oversee over the next 10 or 15 years a huge change. Is there any worry that won't happen? Like they'll build it and no one will come?
It's always a fight. But if you follow best practices, which includes massive private investment, if you follow best practices, where you have a really strong urban design, this should work. We're not talking, like, people say, well, what about Rexall Place? There was no development that happened around there. Well, that's because it followed the worst practices. It's all public money, so there's no private operator who's driven to make a profit and make this thing look good. The building is wrong. It's a big concrete bunker plunked down in the middle of parking lots.
Yeah.
New developments are done so people want to be there. They're open. There's places for people to go. They're excellent in drawing people there. So I think they're going to get this right in terms of design and finance. And if that happens, people will come.
Okay. All right. So there's obviously something for appeal for both sides, and it's a matter of hammering out the 100 mil. And if it doesn't come from the province, then in that one area, they're back to the drawing board, but there are some options available to them.
Yeah, so, someone else would have to step up, you know, other parties within the deal, the Cates Group or the city, you know, and neither of them will say, oh, yeah, we'll do that. Of course, they're going to say no way right now.
Mm-hmm.
But who knows if push comes to shove, what will happen? That said, I think there is a role for the province here. Mm-hmm. This is Northern Alberta's team. We're Alberta's capital. This will be a significant benefit for the downtown, and the province should step up.
Good stuff. And I appreciate your input on that, David, because you are connected to it, and it's information that that is not readily available to the average hockey fan, I don't think, anyway. Let's change gears a little bit. You've written lately about NHL equivalencies and Roger Nielsen's role in scoring chances and how it's morphed into where it is now. It really is an amazing tool, isn't it? It widens the scope to the point where not just goals and points are counted, but you really find out which way the ice is slanted.
Roger Nielsen was such a huge innovator, and we're just finding out now exactly everything that he did. Now, I had no idea that he was involved in this kind of work, but in the 1970s, he developed this system. He realized that if you just look at goals, if you focus on that and goals plus minus and traditional plus minus, you're going to miss a big part of the picture, because a player can be on the ice for a lot of goals but have nothing to do with those goals. And it could just be good luck that he's out on the ice when so many goals are scored. So his, or he could be with really good teammates. So it could be hugely inflated, his plus-minus number. Or it could work the other way, where he's out with bad players and he has bad luck. So he has a real minus number, which he doesn't really deserve. So Nielsen said, let's look at scoring chances, which are much more plentiful, and let's break them down and figure out who was involved in each chance for and who was involved in each chance against. And we'll have a far superior plus-minus system for measuring two-way play. So he started that in the late 70s, and other coaches like Dave King picked up on it. Billy Moores of the Oilers was doing this in Japan in the 1990s. I first heard about it from Billy Moores this winter, that he was using this system. So it's a tried-and-true system that Dave King says most, if not all, NHL teams are doing right now, using right now.
Is it? It's not universal, though. Like, each team would have some subtle differences, correct?
Yeah, if you were to get the numbers, like, they're very secretive about these numbers. They view this as their own information. And I think they would all have a slightly different definition of a scoring chance and slightly different definitions of who was involved in a play and who wasn't involved. So until you had a standardized definition and standardized training for the people doing the marking, you couldn't have comparable numbers. But the numbers you would have for each team would presumably be done by one person, and would be, so you could rank different players on the same team quite well using this method right now, but team-to-team comparisons would be more difficult.
You've been doing this for, what, a couple of years now?
I've been doing it on goals for and against for 4 years,
mm-hmm.
and on scoring chances just this year. And I realized that, it was kind of beaten into my head that just looking at goals wasn't the right way to go, and I came to agree with that. This was Dennis King's big point from MC79. You got to look at scoring chances.
Yeah.
So I started to do that, and I realized that with the PVR, which is such a great tool for just average fans, you're able to watch replays very easily 10, 15 times in super slow motion. And so I think I realized I could do this work on a game-to-game basis. So I did it this year on scoring chances.
One thing that and by the way, all of this information we're talking about is available at Cult of Hockey by David Staples. It's the journal site, and there's some amazing statistics. One of the things that I've been reading and really has kind of convinced me that what you're on the right track is, we always talk about what we see by eye, and maybe we're, some subtle, information that in our brains we go, this is true, but you matched up perfectly. I thought Linus Omark did an amazing job on the power play, and I was surprised and heartened to see that the information that you had culled from your work showed that Omark was a substantial power play performer.
You know, it's really interesting because he didn't put up many power play points, but yet he was involved in all kinds of scoring chances when you looked at it closely, far more than any other forward on the team. I think on 60 minutes of power play time, he was involved in, I think, 34. And the other forwards were around in 24, 25 chances in that same 60 minutes. So this really highlighted. Here's a guy who's creating all kinds of stuff. He hasn't found a way to click yet, or just bad luck. But this is a guy you want on your power play. And so if there was any doubt, this might help clear that up. And I think that, I'm not sure if the Oilers are doing this work themselves. I know that Billy Moores has done it in the past, but it's the kind of thing where you think, well, who we're going to have on that first unit? Well, an anchor on one side of it has got to be Linus Omark, and I think we'll probably see that.
Yeah, I agree, and I think also when your power play is as poor as the Oilers, and you have this kid who he's not a kid, but this guy who can, obviously create chances, and sooner or later, the odds are that they're going to go in, right? At some point, you might need a better closer. You might have to be, paired up with Taylor Hall as an example, but at least the option's there, even if it's a second power play.
And conversely, you might want to take Tom Gilbert off the power play because he's only creating 13 chances every 60 minutes as opposed to Omark, 34 chances every 60 minutes. Tom Gilbert was by far in on the least amount of chances. I like him as a player, but he's not a power play player. And so you got to get someone else on the point there. And hockey is a game, I think, where the weakest link out there can really hurt you. every player has to be at a high level if you're going to really succeed. So if you have that weak link, you're doomed. And I think Gilbert, and to a lesser extent, Foster, really sunk this power play this year.
Well, it's true. I mean, if you think about the game the other night, because it's fresh in our minds, the 1-0 game, the Yannick Hansen pass is a pure skill pass, and that's the kind of thing someone like Omark is capable of. Have you done this for even strength chances as well? Were there any surprises for you there?
Well, Sean Horkoff just really rocked this stat. It really highlighted how strong he was defensively. Taylor Hall led the team when you look at the plus-minus. Now he just created all kinds. He was a scoring chance machine. But Sean Horkoff is a guy who created a good number of chances, but he was so strong defensively and much stronger than every other center defensively. The guy, in a negative sense, who surprised me was Sam Gagné. He creates a lot of chances, the same as all the other centers, but when it comes to his defensive play, he just is leaking chances against at this point in his career. And if he's going to take a step up, it's really not so much on offense that he has to make that leap. It's on defense that he's got to really get his game together, or he will never be a top two center in the NHL. That's what he's got to work on.
And it surprises me because I did read that, and you know, the numbers don't lie. These are scoring chances. They're pretty easy to, not easy, but they're, you know, I think most fans who've watched a lot of games could identify scoring chances. I noticed that he was bleeding badly with Omark and Pajarvi, who seem to be doing better without him. So there's something there, but he's, you know, he appears to be on the right side of the puck a lot, and maybe it's just a matter of foot speed or those kinds of things, but he was definitely exposed.
I'm not sure if it's strength or speed or positioning with him. I think it's intensity. I think he's just got to get furious on defense. I've seen this in Cogliano's game, a little bit more fury and intensity in the last few years. And he's doing better by this metric. And I think Gagné just has to have that. He's got to become more mature and serious and fierce in his own end. And I think that it's a matter of concentration on his part, and he can improve. And I think this is why you often see a leap in responsibility and level of confidence that coaches have in young centers as they get to be 23, 24, as Gagné's headed, is because they start to get that more mature attitude on the ice.
Yeah. And, you know, I'd be remiss if I didn't talk a little bit about the draft at least. Who do you feel the Oilers should take, and who do you think they are going to take?
Well, I've seen only two players play very much at all, Nugent Hopkins and Larson, and I'm enamored with both players. I think they're both fantastic hockey players. Nugent Hopkins reminds me of Matt Duchene. He's got that same kind of slipperiness and quickness on the attack to shake. He will make that quick spin like Duchene does, and he's able to control the puck and make a pass. I don't see any Oilers center who can do that right now. He's got exceptional offensive talent. He needs another year in the Western Hockey League to get bigger. Larson just seemed like a really smart hockey player, like great hockey sense, a big defenseman. I lean towards a forward because forwards develop quicker than defensemen do. I'm not going to be unhappy if they take Larson, but if you look at the history of drafting defensemen, it doesn't work out so well using a top pick on a defenseman. It rarely works out really well for a team. Forwards seem to be the way to go. The Oilers have a hole at center. I'm hoping for Nugent Hopkins.
That's a great answer, and I agree with you totally. One final kind of nerd question here. You work in the Edmonton Journal, have for years in that building. Do you ever wander over and just, you know, pick Matheson's brain about the 1985 team? Like, do you ever just say, hey, let's have a cup of coffee? What was Gretzky really like? Do you do that?
You know, I'm always bugging Matty. I haven't gone like in the. I'm always like so up to date with my concerns that I'm always pestering about the this. Maybe he'd be more open to talking about the old stuff. He's pretty good. Like, he'll tell me a few things, but you know, he's got to be careful what he says too. I have been interviewing Barry Stafford though recently, mm-hmm. and I'm going to be coming out with a big series this summer. And he is a fount of information, inside information about Gretzky, Messier, all those guys. So, you know, we're going to run a big series of stories this summer on Barry Stafford's recollections and his attitude about how the Oilers had such winning hockey in those days. And I'm finding it really fascinating. So
look forward to that. Yeah, for sure. Hey, David, thanks so much. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Alan.
All right. David Staples from the Edmonton Journal and Cult of Hockey, the information we were talking about, the advanced stats. David's been doing some really good articles about it, and something for you to check out from the Edmonton Journal and their Cult of Hockey blog. It's 1:21. We're back with Kent Wilson right after this.